Accounting is boring. It is mind-numbing. Some people would rather go to the dentist than do their own books. Plant a legacy. They focus on profit, but to your exact point, you hit the nail on the head. You, as an owner, want to focus on cash flow. Plant a legacy. I had a customer that was based in Texas. I won't give their name, but they were about a $16 million real estate investor, and they were buying up every fix and flip they could. So they would buy it, they would, you know, fix it, flip it, make great margins. They were doing great. $16 million a year annual revenue. But he didn't scale properly. Plant a legacy. It's a free exercise. Literally, he could have just sat down in Excel or with a pen and paper and said, hey, what if all of these properties that are in development, I have to sell them for a 20% loss? Where will that cash come from? Where will that money come from? How will I survive? Real estate development.
Welcome back to Real Estate Development Land to Legacy. And today I have an extremely boring episode because I brought in an accountant as a guest. So, you know, you may as well just turn it off right now. No, just kidding. Richard Boyd, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not joking. I personally hate accounting. I don't know a lot of fun accountants. And every time this conversation or this topic comes about, I'm like, I just want to get out of it. So tell me why you're in this field and what is it that we as developers need to know about this field and your guys' type of profession and human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly right. Accounting is boring. It is mind-numbing. Some people would rather go to the dentist than do their own books. And that's kind of what started me on this journey. So I started an accounting practice back in 2021 to help small businesses, real estate developers with that problem of, oh, I hate my accounting. I hate looking at QuickBooks or my finances, Excel, but I stay awake at night, tossing and turning, worrying, will I be able to pay my bills? Like, will I be able to make payroll next month, next week? You know, is my business over leveraged? Do I have too much debt? Those kind of things. So on one hand, owners like you and also me hate having to do the work, but the result is, when it's done right, the result is something really clear and it provides clarity and it's stress, you know, ideally it's stress-free, but it just provides you that insight. And so that was one of the impetus for starting my business, and it's really to serve business owners and real estate developers.
Got it. So you mentioned an interesting thing, which is planning payroll. Can I make that payroll? Do I have enough money? That to me sounds more like financial planning rather than accounting. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess back in college business school learned that accounting or accountant is someone who is looking in the rearview mirror, is all about what happened. Finance is what is about to happen, is planning for the future. Yeah. It sounds like you're touching both sides of this equation. Is this right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Accounting's rear view focused, and financial forecasting, FP&A, is all forward looking. But the thing is, you can't do forward looking, you can't do your forecast unless you have a solid base of accounting. And you know, we've experienced that with some of our clients where they don't even know if they're making a profit.
Interesting. And is making profit important? Is this so, where you're? I mean, besides the obvious. Reason I'm asking this is I was always trained, again, back in business school, to primarily focus on cash flow. Profit,
exactly.
Yes, obviously, you plan for it, but cash flow is what we've been ingrained in my mind, that always focus on cash flow.
Yeah, exactly. So that's actually a good question. Most starting entrepreneurs, starting real estate developers, they focus on profit. But to your exact point, you hit the nail on the head. you as an owner want to focus on cash flow. So you can have a negative net income. You'd like to have a positive net operating income, but you can have a negative net income and still have positive cash flow. And that will basically, you're bringing cash into your business, which is great. And then you're reducing your tax liability by having a net net income. And there's obviously some ways we can do that, or the ways that you can do that, structuring your business and holding assets, things like that. But you're exactly right. And this is what I preach to my clients is we focus on cash flow. We focus on cash, capital structure, those kind of things.
Got it. Okay. And how does it relate to development? Obviously, in development, especially if it's a build to sell, math is pretty simple. You need to sell it for more than what it costs you to build it. What's different about what you do, or why do I need to care?
Yeah. So again, great question. The reason you need to know your numbers, so starting with the accounting, you need to be able to say, here's how much we are going to purchase this land for. And that land won't go on the profit and loss. It is an asset on your business. So you need to account for that correctly. And you need to be able to plan out if here is my capital expenditures, my cash outflow. If I'm going to use debt, I need to be able to present to a bank, present to a lender. Here is my balance sheet. Here's my company financials, so that you can communicate the story that, hey, I have a viable business plan. I have a viable business. We buy land, we develop it. We do land entitlement or lot development or even new construction, whatever it is. We do these things. Here's our assets. Here's our liabilities. Here's our IRR or our projected cash flow. And you can present a compelling story to your lender that says, we've got everything in place. This is a good deal. We're a solid company. And this is why you should lend us the money.
Right. Right. That makes perfect sense. One thing I forgot to ask you is the question that I typically ask most of my guests, and I will ask you to hold on to that answer, but that is, what is the most important piece of advice or lesson you would like to share with the listeners who are pursuing real estate development? So I'll let you think about it, and then we'll come back to it when we return. In the meantime, I guess what I would like to understand a little bit better is, in your experience, Richard, when you deal with new construction, new development projects, what is it that you see developers frequently overlook, or maybe not overlook, but don't take close enough, pay close enough attention to?
Yeah. So it depends on the size of the business. So what I have seen with our clients is, as a business starts to scale, most people out there start as a single member LLC. They're a one man or two man crew. Either they're doing the work or they're doing project management, program management, and they're hiring subcontractors, things like that. And their business is around 250,000, 1 million, pretty small. And what happens is they're so focused on basically starting their business. They have their fingers in everything. They're doing operations, they're doing marketing, they're reaching out to investors, bankers, that they don't do their accounting. So for them, their biggest risk and their biggest thing is they're so focused in so many different areas that they're not focusing on the health of their business, which is, are they cash flowing positively? You know, and again, back to your point, nobody likes to do accounting. Nobody likes to do this. But in order to have a successful business, you have to have these things in place to scale. Once they get past that stage, let's say they have hired somebody to do the operations or marketing, they're lead generating, however they're doing it. Then they've either outsourced their accounting or they do it themselves. Now they're getting into, a more detailed, let's say they're at like $5 million annual revenue. Now they're getting into more detailed accounting. So they're probably focusing on their project cost, their work in progress, things like that. They're managing their accounts payable, their accounts receivable. So it becomes more complex. And this is where they need to, again, as I mentioned before, present a compelling case to a bank that says, here is my entire balance sheet, accounts payable, accounts receivable, work in progress, inventory, you know, if you have fixed assets, et cetera, whatever it is. And here's why this project or this deal is a good investment. Okay, so that's, again, this is all part of the scaling process as they grow bigger. And then what we've seen is once they get up to that 10 to 15, $20 million range, now you've got a whole crew. You've got a team of buyers. You've got maybe inspectors, or you've got a team of you know, general contractor, builders, whatever your real estate niche is, you've got a team. And so you as an owner are kind of stepping back. You're doing more strategic planning, more strategic thinking. And so you need to have a system that's set up that says, my team is going to bring me these deals and I will give the stamp of approval. And so I'll need to have this structure in place that says, hey, is this a good deal or not, et cetera, et cetera. And then also, again, because you've stepped into this owner role, you need to have a picture of your balance sheet and your financials that is organizational wide. So, and this is where I have an experience of a customer who did not do this. So I had a customer that was based in Texas. I won't give their name, but they were about a $16 million real estate investor. And they were buying up every fix and flip they could. So they would buy it. They would, you know, fix it, flip it, make great margins. They were doing great. $16 million a year, annual revenue. But he didn't scale properly. So he didn't have a good picture of his cash flow. He didn't have a good picture of his debt service coverage ratio, so DSCR. He didn't have a good picture of some of the fundamental parts of his business. And what happened is around 2022, there was a shift in his area in Texas. And he ended up having, he had to basically get rid of his inventory at a 20% discount. And it was painful. What could have happened is if he had started the right way, if he had scaled the right way, got people in place to either do the right thing in terms of accounting, cash flow, kind of put controls in place. Because once you get to that $20 million annual revenue, you want to have controls in place. So if he had done that before, what he would have noticed is, hey, my capital structure is way out of whack. I'm using all of my cash to fund new deals. I'm taking on too much debt. My cash flow can't support it if there is a market downturn. And so he kind of experienced the worst what-if scenario without any controls in place, without any capital to, you know, risk mitigate, basically. And he's still in business. He's still doing well, but it hurt. It was a hard lesson that he learned.
Was it a problem of setting up the deal, structuring it properly, or was it a pure accounting, record keeping, forecasting issue?
Yeah, so the deal structures were good at the time, but like as you've communicated to your audience, when you buy land, either for land development, you're taking on timing risk. You're taking on market risk. So when you buy land, you're buying it at this date, at this interest rate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like your forecast says, hey, when it appreciates, the supply and demand of this market will be great or be, you know, good enough to sell it. I'll only have to hold it for 60 days. And the interest rates will be X percent. You know, it like you're making assumptions. But in scenario planning and this forecasting, we have to make assumptions as well. What if it's not that? What if you don't, your initial assessment is inaccurate? And so your market forecast is wrong. And so if we have this what if scenario planned out that says, okay, you know, let's say our holding cost quadruple or, you know, whatever. Let's say instead of holding it for 15 days, we're holding it for 60, 90, 90 days. What's going to happen? Do we have a contingency in place to mitigate this risk? Do we have capital in place? Do we have an exit strategy? Like, as if you're land developing, you know, maybe we sell it to a developer, sell the land, we entitle it, we sell it to a developer before we do new construction because market environment has changed. So his initial deal assessment was good, but it was based off an assumption that changed. And the problem is he didn't have the controls in place. He didn't have the accounting controls and the financial controls in place to say, I'm going to mitigate this risk. I'm going to mitigate this risk by doing X, Y, and Z. And that was what ended up biting him in the butt.
Got it. So as part of your services, you also provide this planning service, right? Almost as part of feasibility. The reason I'm asking is it's absolutely something that we do every time we plan a new project. We put together, we do a feasibility study and we put together a financial projection. We always run multiple sensitivity scenarios. What's going to happen if interest rates change, if cap rates change, if demand slows down, if pricing goes up or down. And it sounds like it's also some of the things that you offer to your clients. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So we offer different packages for different clients. So at a basic, let's go back to, let's say you're starting your business from ground zero. You just need kind of the basic stuff. You need somebody while you're on the job site or where you're hopping between, you know, different tasks. You need someone on the back office to say, hey, your accounting is in good shape. And then we scale with the customer. So we scale as you grow bigger. We help you handle different aspects of your business. So, and not everyone, Eugene, not everyone can do what you do in terms of, you know, creating your scenario modeling or your financial forecasting. Some people either don't have that skill or haven't learned it and they'd rather delegate it. And so, you know, we can come in and step in and say, hey, you know, here's your scenario model. Here's a what if scenario that says, you know, how will things look if the market changes?
Got it. Makes sense. Yeah. And absolutely. That's the biggest part of our business is we work with landowners who, frankly, many of them don't have any systems in place and we need to help them put the deals together. Here's a question I recently got asked and, I'm curious what your answer would be. It, you know, because I've been doing it for so long, it seemed obvious, but it was a reminder to me that not everybody thinks that way. Not everybody can see through it. But here's a real life scenario. A few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago, I was asked by a landowner who is contemplating the development of the project. They own the land. Well, actually, a friend owns the land. They are, a few buddies are getting together to develop it. And the landowner is contributing his land. The other buddy wants to finance some of the early operations. And the question was, what do we do with the initial expenses? We don't know yet if this project is viable. We don't know if we're going to go through with it, but we need to start spending money on it for the early due diligence, maybe some conceptual planning, et cetera. And the question was, do we need to form an LLC right now? Like, what do we do? Like, we don't even know if we have a business. We don't want to spend too much money on setting things up if it doesn't happen. How should we go about it? What would you advise to them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the biggest thing, obviously, they'll have to answer some questions along the journey, along the path that says, hey, we're going to go through with this. But from an accounting perspective, the biggest thing that I would want to, you know, account for or track is their startup costs. So any startup costs that are incurred before the, you know, the operations begin, can be amortized over a period of time. So that would be like my biggest thing is that they, you know, these group of friends and these business partners would just keep track of their business expenses. I think it's after $5,000 you can amortize it, but that they would just keep track of their startup costs so that if they do go forward and say, hey, we're gonna make a run of this, we're gonna form an LLC, we'll each be equal partners, then they can amortize those startup costs. And again, back to our earlier point, reduce their net income, their taxable income, but still hopefully have a positive cash flow.
Yep, makes perfect sense. Then how would you set it up? So once the business is going, once we're working on this project and we set up a new LLC, sum up all of the startup costs, they get recorded. The question, that was a couple of years ago, we joined a project where we looked at the books and we saw that they've been working on this project, I believe, for about a year, maybe two, before we joined. And I noticed that they've been expensing all of the dollars that they spent on the design and permitting phase. And to me, that was a question mark right away. I'm like, why are you doing this? What would be your advice for something like this? How do you set up a single purpose entity, books, and would you advise them to expense it in the year that they've incurred the costs, or rather capitalize them? And then what does that, I know the answer, but if you could educate the audience, what does capitalization mean in this case?
Yeah, so you're hitting on a more complex accounting thing called revenue recognition. So revenue recognition is basically you have to account for the revenue when the, let's just say this is a construction project, when the construction project is done, completed. And so in this instance, to your point, they would need to capitalize their project expenses on the balance sheet. So the way we structure it on our clients' balance sheets is we have a job name or property, usually it's the property address, and then we have our project costs within that capitalized. And so we'll have, you know, the purchase price, we'll have, and it depends on how long they're going to hold it for. If they're going to hold it for under 12 months, we don't need to split out land. But if they do end up depreciating it, you can't depreciate land. We basically break it out on the balance sheet that says, here's the project, here's the purchase price, here's the work in progress. And then we can get as granular as the client wants. So that's how they should be doing it. So to answer your other question, what is capitalization? So capitalization at a very, very basic level is instead of accounting for costs on the profit and loss when you incur it, when you, you know, when the cash changes hands, you put it on the balance sheet, and then you expense it when the project is done. And that's what you should be doing for work in progress.
Yep, makes perfect sense. Well, it does to me because I've been doing it for a long time, but I know it's a complicated issue that does come up a lot with owners who do not have that experience. And I try to explain it to the best of my ability, based on my two levels of accounting classes in business school over 20 years ago. And years of experience, but essentially the way I explain it is you do not recognize expenses during the years while you're developing the project. So all the dollars that you spend remain on the balance sheet as your assets, and you do not have any expenses that way. So if you're permitting for a couple of years and then building for a couple of years, for those 4 years, you're submitting zero income, zero loss tax return for those years.
Yeah.
But your balance sheet keeps growing.
But your balance sheet keeps changing. And the reality, Eugene, is not a lot of business owners or real estate developers, when they're starting out, they don't know those things, and they'll expense it. They'll put it on the profit and loss, and then they get, come tax season, come tax time, they get with their tax accountant and they say, "Oh, hey, we've got to redo your books because they're not right. They're not accurate. We can't submit these to the IRS." So, yep. And that's, I'm going to go on a little tangent here. That's the other thing that we provide. So, let's say a medium size or a small to medium sized business. If they're not doing their accounting, if they don't have someone doing their accounting, they're not getting that daily insight into their financial health. Yes. So if they're only working with an accountant come tax season, they're missing out on so much valuable data on the health and financial stability of their business. And really, they're missing out on a lot of strategic information to make decisions and kind of step into that owner role, that strategic oversight role that they need to be in. So,
yep. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Richard, how's your job, your life, your attitude towards future growth changing these days with advancements of AI?
So we have seen AI come in and help with, from an accounting perspective, or from a, let's just say from a financing deal structure, kind of Excel math standpoint. We've seen them step in, or seen AI step in from some of the task-oriented jobs. So think of, we'll take this example. Let's say you're a land developer who creates a forecast for this deal, and either you pay somebody to do it or you do it yourself. Like, we have seen AI come in and supplement that owner by taking off some of the menial tasks. But what we haven't seen AI do yet is the more strategic, more CFO level things. So we have not yet seen AI come in and talk about, hey, here is the strategy of your business. Here are some controls you need to have in place, some risk mitigation. Because we can get recommendations from AI, but sometimes it's over-prescribed. Sometimes AI or the textbooks or whatever will give you controls for your business that are over-prescribed for what you need. Then maybe you're just not at that size that you need it. And so it's not really tailored from a strategic standpoint on your business. But it definitely does help with the menial tasks, helps with kind of the day-to-day things.
Yeah, my dream is to just dump a bunch of receipts and bank feeds and then just have the computer do my books so that I didn't have to
accountants. You know what? No, no offense taken. We want to do that also. Unfortunately, it's just not, we're not quite there yet. So a lot of times on the back end from the accounting side, there's a lot of promises like, hey, QuickBooks can reconcile your bank, your monthly bank assets or liabilities, bank accounts automatically. And it's still in development. I think they're making a lot of progress, but we have not seen it work all the time. And so we've always had to kind of double check. Like, it'll get hung up. It'll just load and load and load and load. And then we just have to do it manually. So it's good, but it's not there yet. I think it will be. I think, like I said, some of these menial tasks will go away in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Do you see it causing a disruption to your industry at all?
I wouldn't say it's a disruption. I wouldn't say it's a disruption if you can't change with the times. If you're stuck in your ways, if you do things a certain way and you're not able to adopt it into your business, then yeah, it's a disruption. But for me, it's a value add. For me, I can kind of leverage Claude or ChatGPT or any other AI tool to actually help my clients. And again, free up my time, help my clients, build better financial reports, build better financial forecasts, those kind of things. So for me, I welcome, I'm excited for AI, but I know not every accounting firm out there is, I'm still fairly young. I'm only 37. A lot of accountants are, a lot of accounting firms are, you know, much older than I am. So I think they're historically, they're probably a little more hesitant of change.
Right. Right. Yeah, I can definitely see that. All right. Well, Richard, share with me. We'll come back to the question that I asked you earlier. But if you, we talked about some of the challenges and issues and problems that you've dealt with. Any other, you know, lessons learned or horror stories that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah. So this is my advice to anyone at any stage. It's actually going to be two pieces of advice. So the first is, it costs nothing to plan. And so again, we'll go back to my example of the client that I had in Texas. His biggest thing was he failed to plan for a worst case scenario. And that is, it's a free exercise. Literally, he could have just sat down in Excel or in a pen with a pen and paper and said, hey, what if all of these properties that are in development, I have to sell them for 20% loss? Where will that cash come from? Where will that money come from? How will I survive? And he didn't plan for it. So the first piece of advice is, it costs nothing to plan. And the second is, learn from the people, learn from mentors. So just like this podcast is teaching investors, teaching land developers how to do things, you know, best tips and tricks and best way of doing things. You know, we all have areas where we're weak. I have areas that I am not as knowledgeable as you, and I'm sure that you have areas that you're not as knowledgeable as me. But together we can make a pretty good team, and so we can learn from each other. We can lean on each other and. You know, you can surround yourself with people who like to share, like to give away success stories, give away tips and tricks and stuff like that. So that would be my second piece of advice is surround yourself with people who want to see you succeed and are willing to help you.
Excellent. Yeah. Never fail to plan. Planning is free, or at the very least, inexpensive compared to potential losses.
And, right. Exactly.
That's exactly why we start every project with a feasibility study, because I've seen, hell, I've done it myself, where I would spend hundreds of thousands of dollars pursuing a project only to find out that some of the base assumptions that we made in the beginning were wrong. And it doesn't cost much to buy that insurance policy. It's just like when you buy a car insurance, hoping to never get in the accident. But if you do, you got it covered. If you don't, it's just part of doing business. And absolutely agree with you. Surround yourself with smart people and don't be afraid to ask questions, because nobody knows it all.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
Excellent. Excellent. Richard, would you like to share contact information if somebody wants to reach out and ask for your advice or ask for your help?
Yeah, absolutely. So my business is called Atlantic Business Advisors. You can email me, richard.boyd@atl, like the first three letters of Atlantic. So richard.boyd@atlbusinessadvisors.com. And that's probably the best way. Either go to my website or email me directly. That's the best way to get in contact.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Richard. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. And I hope this was the type of boring that you guys were expecting.
That's right. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. When the state development